When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, will you still be sending me a valentine, birthday greetings, bottle of wine? If I've been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good afternoon. This is Dr. Rob Stahl with What Should You Expect at Your Age? The answer to that question is a lot. And my listeners, especially the older adults and caregivers out there, shouldn't settle for less. The following is a list of some of the things you should expect as you get older. And my guest for today, Leilani Pelletier from the Alzheimer's Association of Western New York, will help me read the 9 expectations for older adults. Number 1, you should expect to be listened to, valued, and respected.
You should expect knowledgeable and compassionate health care.
You should expect to be as pain-free as possible and to be given medications that will only make you feel better, not worse.
You should expect never to be abandoned or forgotten.
You should expect not to live a life of loneliness or depression.
You should expect never to be the object of prejudice or abuse.
You should expect to get the help you need to live life to the fullest.
You should expect to live up to your potential and have hope for the future.
And lastly, you should expect never to be taken advantage of, except for your talents, knowledge, and wisdom. I'm very excited about the phone calls that came in last week when my guest was Pam Krawczyk, Commissioner of the Erie County Department of Senior Services. The phone calls included a variety of topics, including pain in the foot, medication issues, caregiver stress and what a caregiver can do to help their loved one, and a variety of other things. The phone lines are open, and I think we have some people.
We have a call on the line right now.
Waiting already. Let me just give the number. The number is 855-6848. That's 855-6848. And we're about to start taking your calls. We have a lot to cover today. The topic for today's program is memory problems and Alzheimer's disease. What can be done about them? And I have Leilani Pelletier, the program director of the Alzheimer's Association of Western New York, as my guest today. Welcome.
Thanks, Dr. Stahl. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, tell me something about yourself, and tell us all something about yourself and what the organization does. And let's give the phone number right off the bat where people can call for help.
Well, I think that's fabulous because people are at the office right now ready to help you. It's easy. You can just call our helpline at 626-0600. That's 626-0600. When you call the Alzheimer's Association, we have staff and trained volunteers who are there to take your calls, to talk to you about everything from a little concern you have around your own memory to the most complex of caregiver issues and everything in between. And everything is confidential, and we find the caregivers really get a lot out of that. So that's a very good first step to take.
Well, I started printing out a list. I started printing out all the handouts you have available at the website, which is alzwny.org. And I stopped doing that, so I just put together a list of all the handouts that are available. And I hope to cover some of those things today. The 3 take-home messages, and I think we agree that these are valid and important. If you can just get this out of today, then maybe in the future we can follow up with some more specifics. But these are the 3. 1, not all memory problems are from Alzheimer's disease. 2, there are many approaches and resources that can improve the lives of both patients and caregivers dealing with dementia. And 3, don't wait to get the help you need. And if we still have a call, we can take that.
No. Cool. Please call back.
Okay, we lost the call, but I wanted to start by reading a short selection from a book, a wonderful book called The 36-Hour Day. And this was written by Nancy Mace and Dr. Peter Ravens many years ago. I think it came out in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm. And we do have this book available for loan at our office if anyone would like to borrow it.
It's for loan. You can get it on the Internet through Amazon.com mm-hmm. and other online resources. You can get it at any bookstore, I think, any local library. And it's a fantastic resource. You can get used versions for a couple of dollars, and I'd highly recommend this book. But let me read something that really impressed me during my medical training, my geriatric training. And this is a story of Mary talking about herself. For 2 or 3 years, Mary had known that her memory was slipping. First, she had trouble remembering the names of her friends' children, and 1 year she completely forgot the strawberry preserves she had put up. She compensated by writing things down. After all, she told herself, she was getting older. But then she would find herself groping for a word she had always known, and she worried that she was getting senile. Recently, when she was talking with a group of friends, Mary would realize that she had forgotten more than just an occasional name. She lost the thread of the conversation altogether. She compensated for this, too. She always made an appropriate answer, even if she secretly felt confused. No one noticed, except perhaps her daughter-in-law, who said to her best friend, "I think Mother is slipping." They worried Mary, sometimes depressed her, but she always denied that anything was wrong. There was no one to whom she could say, "I am losing my mind. It is slipping away as I watch." Besides, she did not want to think about it, didn't want to think about getting old, and most important, she didn't want to be treated as if she were demented. She was still enjoying life and able to manage. What do you think about that, Leilani?
I think it really represents the fear that people have when they find that their ability to think becomes muddled in any way, shape, or form. If you ask anyone, would you rather have a healthy body or a healthy mind? Many people want to be sure, and they say, I want to keep my mind. I want to be able to express myself and make my own decisions.
And recognize their friends and their children
sure.
and loved ones.
We are our memories. We say that to each other all the time. Think about all the importance we place on our memories. And when we feel those start to go or to change, many times we start to keep to ourselves. Yeah. And children have a very difficult time coming to mom and saying, Mom, I've noticed that your memory is giving you a little bit of trouble. And we tend to deny that. We're a very strong, very independent society. And the people that built this country, those that are at most risk for Alzheimer's disease now, are a very strong and independent generation. And taking help or admitting to a difficulty is not an easy thing to do, especially around memory and your ability to think and make your own decisions. That story really echoes and is echoed throughout many families in Western New York.
In reading this, and I've read it and thought about it over the years, and it keeps coming back to me, it really was the one thing that gave me a true feeling of what a patient must be going through. And it strikes of isolation and loneliness that these things are happening, that the person has a shameful attitude towards it, that they don't want to admit it to themselves and don't want anyone else to know about it. And I think maybe today is an opportunity to get out that if people realize that these things do happen, and if you can admit it to someone and get help for it, then your life can be a lot better all along the way, even if it is a progressive worsening dementia.
I think even 10 years ago, before the advent and the frequent use of medications and even the Internet to educate ourselves and strong organizations like the Alzheimer's Association, other caregiving organizations like the Department of Senior Services that you had last week, people really wonder what can be done. And there's actually quite a bit that can be done, not only to manage the disease should it strike you, but to help prevent it. We know a lot about how to minimize your risk for illnesses that can cause dementia, like strokes. And there's a lot that people can do. And there's treatments now for the symptoms of Alzheimer's. We know it doesn't stop the disease, but it really can help people stay independent longer. And bottom line, that's what people really want.
I agree. And we're going to touch on some of those today. If we have a caller, we can take it. And I also don't want to put off people who are calling in on other topics. Please, we'll take those calls, too. We might handle those a little bit more briefly than we might otherwise so that we can get through all the important information we have for you today. So,
you do have one caller, and I'm going to take care of another. Go right ahead.
Okay. Hello?
Yes.
Yes.
I know that you can have lapses of memory due to many things, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, etc. When a person is not willing to recognize the fact they're in a stage of this kind, they become very angry and upset because they're being accused of being forgetful. I never know quite how to handle it. Do you help them gently to think through and help them to remember and try to be patient, or just plain tell them what the thing is and that they know about it?
Well, this is a very common scenario, and I'll let Leilani answer that for you. I'm sure she sees it all the time.
Every day. Your call really speaks to the heart of some of the difficulties when someone is having memory loss and someone caring like you wanting to help them. Really, if someone does have an illness that is causing dementia, and dementia is the symptom of a disease process, like you said, it can come from many different things. Really, gentleness and understanding is the first part and does need to happen. Many times you're not going to be able to convince them that they've forgotten. Many times they know something's wrong. That's where the anger comes from, that anger, that frustration you see. There's probably a feeling there that something is off, although they probably cannot articulate it. So instead of dealing with the fact behind what the person is telling you, deal with their emotion. For example, if they're angry because you're telling them that they've forgotten and they're insisting that they don't even deal with the forgetting issue. Say, you know what, you seem really upset. I love you. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. And ask more open-ended emotional questions rather than fact-based, and get them to feel like you're really, really listening to them. And really listen for a little while, because ultimately that emotion will come forward. So trying to convince them, as you know, it doesn't work well for you, does it?
No, not well.
No.
And the other problem that I have is with another person is they ask about people who have long passed away.
Yeah.
And you don't know if you should deal with it like you're giving them fresh information. Because when you say, oh, that person has passed away like 10 years ago, and they seem so shocked and astounded, I don't know if I should play along with what they're thinking.
It won't hurt them. It won't hurt a person to use what's called a validation theory, which is just to go along. You don't have to say that they've gone if you expect that there'll be a shocked or an upset reaction. What you can say is, if they say, I miss Joe, you know, tell me about, where's Joe? I miss Joe. Or where's Mom? One of the things that you can say to them is, I haven't seen Mom or Joe. I miss him. Boy, she, you know, her apple pies, I miss those. You know, you can talk about something about the person without having to say they're gone or they're here. And many people find it difficult to do what they consider to be lying.
Yeah.
They don't want to mislead them or make the problem worse. Actually, what you're doing is just opening them up to share what they're feeling.
I'm always afraid that if I do lie to cover it up, that they may be more with it than I'm able to judge.
Well,
they'll think I'm crazy.
Yeah, well, that's why you ask the open-ended question,
right?
Because you're not saying one thing or another. You're opening up, because sometimes it does happen. Sometimes they say, what do you mean he's not here? He died 3 years ago. That does happen. You're absolutely right. So leaving it open like that, just to say, I miss Joe. It's been a long time since I've seen him, too. What do you miss the most about him?
And I remember my grandmother had several strokes, and it affected her ability to think and remember people, including all of us. And we did just the wrong thing. I was still in grade school, and my parents would take us in, and we'd say, hi, Grandma, how are you? It's Rob. It's your daughter. Don't you recognize us? And that was, you know, just the wrong thing to do because she couldn't recognize us, and it only added stress and anxiety when she was trying to grasp for something that she wasn't able to. I think, you know, the fact of the memory problem, if you can also focus on the function, what functional problems it's causing, and offer assistance. If someone's having trouble remembering names, then suggest, well, why don't you keep a list of your best friends and their phone numbers. Offer that kind of help if the situation arises where that might be a helpful suggestion rather than forcefully reorienting someone to a present or to facts that they really don't have in their mind and can't keep for even 5 minutes. You can look at Alzheimer's disease as if you can imagine yourself talking to someone and then 5 minutes later not having a clue that you even talked to that person, how life would be like in dealing with that. You want to try and deal in the present. Talk about those things like mom's apple pie and what the kids are doing, not don't you remember that yesterday we had a nice party. What do you think, Leilani?
I think that's absolutely right. And one of the things that I think I hear you're experiencing is that it's not always consistent what they seem to remember and what they don't. Do you find that?
Right.
Okay.
And with dealing with my stuff, when I think I'm really, really losing it, I've decided to analyze it in this way. If I think I'm losing it, then I'm aware of it, and I probably am not losing it.
Well, you should come here and do the show with us because you've really found a way to, actually, one of the doctors that we work with frequently says, you know, most people who are concerned that they have a memory problem or a thought problem probably don't. Many times, in the presence of Alzheimer's disease, you lack or you have a diminished insight into what's happening to you. Again, that's where that anger and that emotion comes
right.
from. So the fact that you're recognizing it as a problem actually, and it might not feel like this, but puts you in control. You have the ability to think through it. So I would, you do have to take every minute and every moment at a time and not, try not to fix on exactly what her ability level is, because it will fluctuate, actually. And it's not that they're doing it on purpose, although it can seem that way. It's really just, this is not black and white, no memory and memory. There are some thoughts that get through, and that social response, the you know, that how are you today, I'm fine, thank you, think of how automatic for you that is.
And sometimes it's a lack of their concentrating, because if you try to go back and retrace in speech what they're missing, they eventually realize what's going on, and they tell you what they did forget. It was just not concentrating to remember more than a real problem.
Yeah.
And concentration as well.
Yeah, there are multiple factors that could worsen dementia, and the word dementia, so people understand, dementia comes from the Greek roots, and D is away from, and mentia is like mental, away from the mind. A person is getting away from their mind abilities, their ability to think in a variety of different ways. And dementia is the umbrella word that covers all different problems that affect thinking. Alzheimer's disease is one type of dementia. I mentioned my grandmother's strokes. Multiple small strokes can also look like very much like Alzheimer's in certain ways, and that's another form of dementia. Rough numbers, people with dementia, 50% have Alzheimer's, 25% have what's called multiple infarct dementia, stroke-related dementia, and then 25% are other causes. So you mentioned a bunch of things that we are going to get to later in the show in discussing caregiver issues, caregiver stress. And we have a questionnaire we'll run through briefly that talks about how you can assess yourself or what kind of stress you might be under in trying to help and deal with someone that has dementia. Jimmy, I don't know if we have another call.
There is a second call on the line.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you for your help.
You're welcome. I hope that helped.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yes. Dr. Stahl.
Yes.
My husband died of Alzheimer's 3 years ago.
Okay.
But you took care of him before he went into a nursing home.
Okay.
And I wanted to tell you how much we appreciated your care. Whenever I called your office, you were always available to speak with me, and you were so kind to both of us, and I wanted to thank you.
Well, thank you so much. You might tell people I didn't ask you to call.
No. And I think of you often.
Well,
and I just wanted you to know.
Well, you know, I think the important part, the role that a doctor can play in the whole process, the main thing is just being there. It's similar to what a doctor needs to do for cancer patients. Cancer patients tend to get isolated because of their illness. People with dementia, Alzheimer's disease, tend to also get isolated, and their families get isolated because of the illness. And the doctor, by just being there, by saying that, feel free to call me if there are any problems that develop, asking the caregiver, the spouse, if they're having any problems dealing with it, is as important, if not more important, than doing specific things for the patient themselves. Often there aren't many specific things to do for the patient themselves, and that working with the caregiver is the best thing that can be done for both the patient and the caregiver. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's what I try to do in my practice. It does take some time, perhaps, or even just a refocus of what the priorities are when a patient and caregiver do come into the office.
Well, that is important, and I know not everyone does that, but I just wanted you to know I appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Okay, good talking to you again.
Doctor, if you can, one more call.
Sure. Hello, it's Dr. Stahl.
Hello, Dr. Stahl. I'm be 70 years old in a few months, and I'm taking Lipitor.
Wait, you're too young to call this program, I think.
I wish I were. I wish I were. I'm not so sure about the world situation today.
No, we actually want people your age and even a little bit younger, so we can make sure you're doing all the right things to be the best you can as you do get additional years on.
Yeah.
So go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right. I take Lipitor, and sometimes I have trouble remembering a word or two, you know, and I read that one of the side effects of Lipitor is memory loss. Would you address that?
You know, I'll defer to Leilani for this. I mean, Lipitor in the listing of adverse effects, I don't recall that it's there as a common side effect. A blanket statement is that any medication can cause different adverse effects, especially in older people. And Lipitor and the group of medications that treat high cholesterol can cause that type of symptom. The important thing is that when you notice a change after a change in treatment, in this case starting a medication, that gives you pretty good evidence that there might be a cause and effect there. Leilani, why don't you comment on that too?
I'm glad you called about this because while I don't know what's causing the memory difficulty, and we can even ask a couple quick questions to
sure.
help you pinpoint a little bit more accurately what's happening, but you may want to just check with your pharmacist because I think that might be one of the side effects of Lipitor. Do read the insert. I could be wrong, but if I'm not mistaken, I would like you to take a look at that because...
I'm not sure if that's where I saw that, side effect, but I did see it someplace.
Did the little change you noticed in your memory coincide with when you started taking the medication?
No, I've been on that for a while. Not a terribly long time, but I'd say probably a couple of years, maybe.
Okay. Would you mind just sharing with me just a thing or two about what's happening? You're having difficulty with names where you didn't used to?
Yes. Not to a big extent, but yes, I am. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, or you can't think of the word or...
yeah, that tip of your tongue thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I will tell you and what we do know is that as we get older, mm-hmm. It does take a little longer sometimes for us to retrieve things.
Mm-hmm.
That definitely does not mean that it's classic early Alzheimer's signs. It does take a little longer for us to retrieve information and to process information as we get older.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the way that you try to determine if there really is a problem is it getting in your way? Is it bad enough that it's bothering you? And then my recommendation is go to your doctor for a nice, thorough checkup and say, you know, I'm having just a little trouble with my memory, and talk about getting things like your thyroid level taken, making sure that overall there isn't something else, and Dr. Stahl can address this as well, but you just want to rule out anything physical, and you also want to look at things like depression and other things that can cause a little bit of memory loss.
Because, like, I was at a group discussion thing, and this one woman in the group, I couldn't think of her name. I knew it at the beginning of our meeting, and then what's her name?
Well, let me also ask you, you started taking this medication, and that's when you noticed you had memory problems?
No.
What was it again? I think I've
been on it for maybe a couple of years.
Okay.
Hard to remember exactly. I can't remember.
Okay. Well, you know, then if you've been on medications for quite a while and it didn't cause a problem initially, then it's unlikely that that medication is causing the problem now. It's more likely something else is going on.
Mm-hmm.
But that does not mean that Alzheimer's is setting in. Even gradual changes, like Leilani mentioned, you need to get your thyroid function checked.
That's a very good idea.
Low thyroid or even high thyroid is very common in older people and can cause thinking problems.
Well, I'll do that. Mm-hmm.
The issue of depression is one of the most common problems that could even cause memory problems or make them worse.
Mm-hmm. Didn't know that.
So someone who has Alzheimer's but has depression as well, if you treat the depression, their function, their thinking ability may improve.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, if it may just be depression in and of itself that's causing the memory problems.
Mm-hmm.
And by treating it, it can improve remarkably. I had a patient, and I'm going to read some things from emails that her wife sent me over the course of about 6 years during which I took care of him. He first came to me, and he came to me because he was having some memory problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I found he had low thyroid.
Mm.
And by giving him a thyroid pill and adjusting it to the right dose,
mm-hmm.
his family definitely noticed an improvement. But still, over the next 6 years, he did develop gradually worsening Alzheimer's disease.
Mm-hmm.
But for that period of time, initially, and it was for a good year or so, that little bit of thyroid medication really improved his life. So those are the kinds of things you should be looking into.
I definitely will.
And I just want to say, too, if you'd like to give us a call at the Alzheimer's Association, 0600.
Okay.
We have lots of information, including what are, you know, warning signs, things you can really take a look at and see, you know what, I'm not really having any of these other things. It's just this one thing with names or,
mm-hmm.
and we can also send you information on some of the classes we teach on how to keep your brain healthy. It's called our Power Your Memory program. And I think you might really enjoy it.
So I think I would, too.
If you'd like to give us a call, we'll be happy to help you out even more.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, mm-hmm. you're welcome.
Yes, thank you.
Jimmy, how are we doing with calls? Any more on tap?
Our lines are open.
Okay, fine. Then that gives me a minute to go through the Alzheimer's Association 10 Warning Signs of Alzheimer's Disease, and this is available on the website, alzwny.org, and the 10 are memory loss, difficulty performing familiar tasks, problems with language, disorientation to time and place, poor or decreased judgment, problems with abstract thinking like balancing a checkbook, misplacing things, changes in mood or behavior, changes in personality, and loss of initiative. And you can see that a lot of these symptoms also do go along with depression. So there's tremendous overlap, and you can't just assume that you have Alzheimer's or have depression when you have any of these symptoms. We'll take a short break now, and we'll come back with more discussion with Leilani Pelletier and about memory and Alzheimer's disease and what could be done about it.
Down a long dusty driveway, this time we both would go. Only he had grown old and gray, and his mind was a wandering. Daddy took me by the hand, said I know where we're going, and I understand. Don't worry, boy, it'll be alright.
Back now with my guest today, Leilani Pelletier. Am I pronouncing that right?
You're pronouncing it beautifully.
Okay.
Right on target.
I didn't even take French. I was a Spanish person in high school. She's program director of the Alzheimer's Association of Western New York. We're here to take your calls. The number again here is 855-6848, 855-6848. And the number to call the Alzheimer's Association of Western New York for help and information is 626-0600. That's the main number, and the person who answers the phone will direct you to the appropriate place.
One caller that did call, she didn't want to go over the air, but she did mention the fact about nutrition. Could you address that?
Yes. Let me just say that this half of the program, we're going to focus on a couple of things. One, we're going to clarify the different terms and words that are used to indicate dementia and Alzheimer's disease. And we're going to go into caregiver needs, how people that care for people with dementia can get help so that they stay healthy in order to best help their loved one. Now, let's talk about nutrition.
We actually wrote a book on this because caregivers have questions like this. When you have Alzheimer's disease or dementia, the appetite really can take a beating. Your ability to recognize or remember that you've eaten, how much you're eating, that you're hungry, is really a challenge, even as you get older, even if there isn't a dementing illness there. So we wrote a book for caregivers. It's called Managing Nutrition and Dementia Care. It's available at our chapter, and it goes through how do you help someone with Alzheimer's or dementia eat. Sometimes just the eating experience when you have Alzheimer's disease, having too many plates around, too many utensils, too many cups, having to go too quickly or too slowly, really can impair how much you eat. And people with Alzheimer's disease need good nutrition and good hydration to prevent things like hospitalization. So it's really all about many times how you present the food, maybe giving up the fact that the person, I just have to say this, I had a lady that I took care of one time who came into the nursing home where I was director of social work, and she said to me, my mother, you can feed her anything except peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. She's never liked them. She will never eat them. Don't even put a peanut butter jelly sandwich in front of her. Well, she just wasn't hungry. It was a long day for her. I sat down and I said, you know, Mrs. Jones, can I get you something to eat? And she looked at me and she said, I'd like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. She had heard the person next to her say it, but what ends up happening many times is our lifelong preferences change. And we have to get used to that for people with Alzheimer's. We have to go where they are and meet their needs. So I gave her the peanut butter, and she loved it.
We talked a little bit about calories, just getting calories in people, and do we worry about whether they're getting their vegetables or other rounded sources of nutrition? And what's your philosophy on that?
Well, we did the book in conjunction with a dietitian and with caregivers. It said, yes, of course, you have to have the proper mix of fluids and vitamins are very important to even helping medications work well in your system. But if the only thing that they want to eat is pudding for breakfast and you can sneak in some, you know, vegetables at lunchtime, don't try to force it into the specific exact food pyramid if they're not taking it. Most doctors that we talk to say it's all right to give them the things that they want, things that they need, make sure they're getting their medication, but try and make it appetizing. Eating healthy, sometimes it's difficult to eat some of the things that are healthier, so you might need to just balance that a little bit.
Yeah, what, are you still there?
Oh, no, the call is not there.
Okay, the call is not there. Okay. I hope that helped. Nutrition is critical, and just like any other illness that might occur when someone has Alzheimer's disease, the thinking ability is going to take a nosedive. If someone has pneumonia or even a urinary tract infection, there might be a dramatic worsening in memory and function and behavior just because of that illness. And nutrition, poor nutrition, is another type of illness that can make matters a whole lot worse. So going with the flow, getting the calories in, is extremely important. I want to clarify the statistics that I mentioned earlier, and the Alzheimer's Association has the most recent statistics and causes of dementia. And don't forget to remind me that we're going to talk about the difference between dementia, senility, Alzheimer's disease, old-timers disease, and all of those things. But 56% of dementia is felt to be caused from Alzheimer's disease, 14% from those multiple strokes, 12% from multiple causes, 8% from Parkinson's disease, 4% from brain injury, and 6% other causes. Why don't you say a word about the terminology that people use, just so we can clarify a little bit and make it understandable.
We people ask us all the time, and understandably so, because even professionals weren't using the right terminology for a very long time because we weren't diagnosing things properly. People ask us all the time, well, my mother has dementia. The doctor said my mother has dementia. And we say, well, do we know what's causing it? No, it's just because she's old. And we're here to tell you that although it gets harder to remember some things as you get older and retrieval time increases, actually forgetting which house is yours or getting lost on the way home from a familiar trip from the grocery store is not just because you're getting old. There's something happening behind that, whether it's from multiple mini strokes or the onset of Alzheimer's disease. It's not because you're old. We'll start there. The word dementia, as you explained, is really an umbrella term. It's actually, dementia is a symptom, a group of symptoms that's something caused by a disease. It's a lot like pain in your arm, in your elbow. You can have pain in your elbow from knocking it on the table or arthritis or bursitis, but it's still pain. But there's different causes. With dementia, it's the same thing. Dementia is the loss or the decline in the ability to think and reason and remember and use judgment. And it can come from a number of different causes, Alzheimer's being the most common cause. So to say someone has dementia really tells you what their symptom is, but it doesn't tell you what's actually causing the problem.
I don't know if we have any callers. If we don't, then there's a lot more things we can cover here. One thing that also is available from the Alzheimer's Association website is a care management blueprints for Alzheimer's disease. And I just want to mention the six domains, the main areas that are important to think about when caring for an Alzheimer's patient. Number one is patient function. How is that person functioning, and can they function a little bit better, maybe by structuring their environment? Structure is critical, and structure avoids confusion. If someone knows what to expect and doesn't have something new thrown at them that they don't know how to deal with because of their thinking problems, life can be a lot more manageable. Caregiver support, providing support for the caregiver. I also have a caregiver's handbook that was put together by the San Diego County Department of Mental Health many years ago that many people have found useful. And If you email me at drstall@whatshouldyouexpect.com, I'd be happy to send you a copy of that at no charge. Or write the station, 225 Delaware Avenue, Buffalo, 14202. The third domain is medical care. Addressing those medical problems that might not be treated optimally, that could help someone's memory. As we mentioned, that pneumonia, urinary infections, pain, untreated pain can be a significant tipper of the balance, so to speak, in an Alzheimer's patient. They may not be able to express that they're having pain, but some new behavioral problems, agitation, could very well be an indicator that the person's experiencing some pain. And things as simple as Tylenol four times a day or in the morning and at night might help that person get off to a good start and get a good night's sleep. The psychosocial aspects of Alzheimer's, both for the patient and the caregiver. Patient nutrition, which we just talked about, one of the six domains in caring for an Alzheimer's disease patient. And number six, advanced directive planning. Do you and your spouse and your loved one have your healthcare proxy in place so that someone is clearly designated to make decisions if you're no longer able to, and to have discussed what decisions should be made? That healthcare proxy is to make decisions based on what the patient would have wanted, not what the healthcare proxy would want for themselves. And in a way, that relieves a tremendous burden from the healthcare proxy in that they don't have to worry about what they would do for themselves. They just need to follow what the patient would have wanted. And there's a very simple form which you can likewise email me or write me, and I'd be happy to send that to you. A recent health fair at a senior apartment complex, only 40% of the people at that senior apartment building had healthcare proxies in place. This is extremely important for people that are developing progressive memory problems. So those are six domains of care to be kept in mind. And I think we have a caller.
Yes, sir.
Hello, it's Dr. Stahl.
Yes, Dr. Stahl?
Yes.
I wonder, I've been listening to you, and I wonder, is there a test to determine the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's?
Well, that's an excellent question, and as we've been hinting at, there are certainly things to be done to evaluate a patient, to exclude problems that might be making memory problems worse or might be causing the memory problems themselves. Most important of which that a doctor might use in the office is called the mini mental state exam, which is a general questionnaire that asks questions like, what's today's date, where are you now, what's the state, county, town that we're in right now. It asks the person to subtract 7 from 100 and keep subtracting from what they get left to test mathematical ability to spell the word world backwards, to write a sentence to see if they're able, if they have language function, where they're able to formulate a sentence and have the motor ability to write out a sentence. They're asked to copy a design. And mostly the thing that shows up as abnormal in early dementia is asking someone to remember three objects. Usually I use ball, pen, and street, and I ask the person to repeat that to me, and in 5 minutes I ask them again. And sometimes a person has no clue, and it's very clear they have no clue what three things I asked them to remember earlier on. Well, Lonnie, mm-hmm. Why don't you comment on that?
That's where you start, because that MMSE is designed to evaluate how different parts of the brain.
That's the mini mental state exam.
Yeah, the mini mental state exam. It measures the function of different parts of the brain and gives the clinician a good picture of which parts are working well and which parts might have more difficulty. As Dr. Stahl was talking about earlier, a good physical to rule out that anything else is going on. Ask the doctor to ask you those questions and indicate to the doctor what actually is happening to you that you're concerned about. Give a solid and clear example of why you're asking about your memory. Many doctors will go forward and do things like do some imaging, either an MRI or a CAT scan, to rule out other things. Some very simple to understand reasons why you'd have trouble with the thought process. Brain tumors,
people who have fallen and hit their head, sometimes
right.
develop bleeding within their skull that might not be so dramatic that it kills them in a short time, but can cause thinking problems. There's something also called normal pressure hydrocephalus, a syndrome that I've seen numerous times, and this is basically water on the brain, and it causes classically walking problems, incontinence, and thinking problems. And occasionally, by treating that, there's a simple procedure that I even sent a 96-year-old patient for the procedure because it made the difference between her being able to stay at home and going to a nursing home. And she was able to stay at home after she had that very simple procedure. The differentiation, dementia, like we said, is a problem with thinking. And then you go into the evaluation to try and determine what's causing that problem. The mini mental state exam is a first step. Very important is the geriatric depression scale. On my self-assessment form, I call that the emotional assessment, so that no one, there's no stigma involved. It's just to generally check your emotions, but really it's the geriatric depression scale. And one question is enough to give a clue. Do you often feel sad or blue? And if you talk to someone and they make you feel depressed when you're talking to them, that's also actually a very good indicator that that person might be depressed. You might consider them just crabby or very negative, but they might be suffering actually from depression that's affecting their life. Any other specific questions? Is there?
Yes. Well, is it possible that if a person was diagnosed with depression, as you say, after a fall or something like that, where they possibly injured their head, is it possible for them to recover and recover their sanity?
Well,
I'm speaking about a friend of mine, and she seems right as rain to me, and yet her doctor says, "Oh, you're fine physically, but you have dementia."
Well,
I wonder if she should be retested.
Well, I think the question would be, what did that doctor do to assess what the dementia was from? The only way to diagnose Alzheimer's disease definitely is by doing a brain biopsy. There's no other definite test, but the progression of the disease, the typical symptoms, you can make a pretty good diagnosis of Alzheimer's without doing a brain biopsy, and clearly very few brain biopsies are done to diagnose Alzheimer's disease. But it sounds like if the doctor is just saying you have dementia, that doctor is just giving the umbrella general term, and if they're not able to be more specific, that your dementia is likely from Alzheimer's disease, it's likely from multiple small strokes, it's likely from Parkinson's disease, that it's made worse by medications you might be on, that it's made worse by medical illnesses that you might have, then the suspicion I would have is that doctor may not know how to make those specific diagnoses and how to put a dementia into a category.
I see.
So, you know, I have this self-assessment packet where you can evaluate yourself or your friend, whoever might have the problem. You can contact me. I'd be happy to send that to you as well. And I think look at the website of the Alzheimer's Association. It goes through the different testing that can and probably should be done to make sure other things aren't going on.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay. Caregiver stress. Mm. I want to go through it's called the Caregiver Strain Instrument. And this is to get an idea of how a caregiver is doing, caring for someone that has a memory problem that's affecting their life. And what this indicates is that maybe the caregiver needs to seek help. It's an extremely difficult job, and the one patient and spouse that I talked about, the wife went for 6 years keeping this man at home as he gradually lost his memory, lost his ability to recognize her. I'll read a little bit from an email that she sent me in, this is January 2001, and she's describing Jean, and she said I could use their names. Jean and Kitty are their names. We missed Jean's appointment on Friday, January 5th, 2001. They live out in Arcade, and the snow was miserable that day. But she describes, he's almost constantly on his feet, either walking or dancing to the music that I have playing upstairs and downstairs. He whistles to the music. He's constantly whistling, even if there's no music playing. And it is mind-boggling that he knows so many songs and rarely repeats whistling one. In my busy day, I do take the time to jig around with him, and he gets a big kick out of that. Sometimes when he is talking to me and there is no sense to what he is saying, and he will make a statement something like this. Well, we can make this happen or not happen, or maybe we can just go, and I will pick up on it just as he is about to do the same, and he will laugh a great belly laugh at his mistake. And this was more than a year before the following email that she sent me, July 29th, 2002. We will not be keeping the appointment for August 9th. Jean is now residing at an assisted living facility. It was with a heavy heart that I placed him there. I had tried to first have him stay there while I attended three graduations for our grandchildren, one wedding, and a visit with my son and wife to greet our newly born granddaughter. She goes on to say that it will take me a long time to come to grips with my present situation, and that's the guilt of having him go to a facility. I'm not the only one that has this problem, and I will do my best to carry on. I visit Jean, and he is always pleased to see me and hugs me and kisses me and tells me, I love you, Mom. That is the extent of our communication. We walk together, and I rub his back, massage his feet, rub his scalp, whatever I think makes him have some measure of pleasure. Maybe one day there will be something more that you and the medical community can do to help alleviate or cure the Alzheimer's patients. Like all diseases, it is terrible. However, this disease causes the loss of a loved one twice, first in communication and everyday living, and then death. So I talked to her today, actually, and to see how things were going on, and ask her if I could read some of these on the air. And Jean doesn't recognize Kitty anymore. Though they still are able to spend time together. He's certainly not what he was when he first came into my office, when he was able to show me and explain the ship that he served on in World War II. Kitty had problems with him in getting violent and being resistive to care. And now he's in a place that's secure, a fairly constant environment, and Kitty has the stress relieved of the day-to-day care for her. She's able to just go and enjoy his presence, and he, I'm sure, has some sense of her presence as well. It's these people that are there, that are willing to give of themselves, but she also sought help. She asked me different approaches. She was very resourceful in terms of going to the internet. Clearly, I have about 30 emails from her over those 6 years that I took care of Jean. And it's those people that organizations like the Alzheimer's Association, Western New York are there to help. The Erie County Senior Services Department is there to help. And, you know, what do you think of, you know, that whole story? You know, I think about them all the time. Yeah. I've thought about them over the years, and I want to get down to where Gene is and see him and Kitty. And
it's one thing to hear the word Alzheimer's. It's another thing entirely to see what it does to a person. And I'd like to speak to, you know, what can a caregiver do? What help is out there, and where to go? So I thought I'd just take a moment and briefly outline and let everyone know that even if you don't know what could be helpful, even if you don't know where to look, starting by calling the Alzheimer's Association, we will talk with you. We will sit down. We will meet with your family and make out a plan, answer your questions.
I think the support groups of the organization have been tremendously useful. Just to know that you're not alone in what's going on and how you're feeling is critical. We won't have a chance to go through the caregiver strain instrument, but just so you know that it's acknowledged that caregiving is a very difficult job to do.
And to that end, I just want to mention that we have numerous training and education classes and workshops and seminars at our office and around the 8-county region where we can coach around how to manage some of those behaviors that are challenging, how to help them get their bath, how to help yourself deal with some of the repetitive questions and everything in between.
Unfortunately, we're coming to the close of the hour, right? And I wish we could go on for another couple of hours because there's so much to cover. But I do want to mention there are several excellent resources besides what we had talked about. The book, The 36-Hour Day by Nancy Mace, M-A-C-E, and Dr. Peter Ravens, R-A-B-I-N-S, Elder Rage, E-L-D-E-R, Rage, R-A-G-E, by Jacqueline Marcel, is a wonderful book that outlines what Jacqueline went through in caring for her father. And a book called Alzheimer's Activities by B.J. Fitzray, F-I-T-Z-R-A-Y, is a book that helps you to find things that you can do with someone that has thinking problems, which is sometimes very difficult. And like I mentioned with my grandmother, the only thing we can think of was, hi, Grandma, do you recognize me? But there's a lot of things, and that book covers a tremendous number of possibilities for you. Once again, the Alzheimer's Association of Western New York, for information and guidance, 626-0600, their website alzwny.org, for a wealth of information on general and specific topics. I thank again Leilani for being here, and I think we're going to need to have you come back and
come
talk
back
some more. If you want to send me a note, you can mail it to WHLD, 1270 AM, 225 Delaware Avenue, Buffalo 14202, or email me, drstall at whatshouldyouexpect.com. And the website where we have more information and a tape of each show, whatshouldyouexpect.com. Thanks to Sawyer Brown for singing the wonderful song, The Walk. And I want to end today's program with a short poem. And we're going to talk about humor in fun and friendship after 50 next week with ladies from the Red Hat Society. And now we'll have Dr. Saul Elkin, 72 years young, read a little poem. And we'll close with a little more music, and I'll see you next week. It's Dr. Rob Stahl with What Should You Expect at Your Age?
The golden years have come at last. I cannot see, I cannot pee, I cannot chew, can't tie my shoe. My muscles lost their flex, sure can't have sex. My memory shrinks, my hearing stinks, no sense of smell, I look like hell. My body's drooping, got trouble pooping. The golden years have come at last. The golden years. Ooh, what a blast.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, Will you still be sending me a valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I've been out till 2:45.